Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Celebrating 8 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of two books, and all-around nice guy.
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, thank you especially for that. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Check out our blog while you're there, too. We'll send it to you if you want us to do that, or you can just come to the homepage and click on the blog there at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Or if you want to go directly to the blog, it's jimsblog.biz. We keep everything that we do this week and last week right there on the right up front on the blog, so you can go back and listen to things again if you want to. And don't forget all the other things, many other things you can do on our website. Tony Paradiso is all over our website. Tony is one of our top management experts. He is also an entrepreneur. He has his own businesses. He's the author of The Management Minefield, and he's our good friend. Tony, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. Good morning.
It's good to have you back, as always. Tony, I know that you wanted to talk. One of the things you want to talk today about is something that I really am happy that you want to talk about, because I think it's one of the critical perspectives that small business owners must have in the 21st century, and that's understanding and managing with and leading change.
Yeah, most businesses kind of change happens around them, and then it's there before they realize it, and now instead of being proactive, they become reactive. And that's not the mode you want to be in if you want to kind of sustain a good business model.
If you're always reacting to change, you're a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Have you seen any of those lately?
Well, you're
waiting to become extinct.
Right, right.
If you're reacting to change. Because, you know, Tony, one of the things I've been saying for years now, for many years, is that the only thing different today than 5,000 years ago, that there's not much difference in the world in the area of change. A computer is just a fancy wheel. What's different is the velocity of change.
Right.
And that's
right.
The deal. I mean, you and I are not facing anything any more significantly from an upheaval standpoint, from a life-changing standpoint. You know, this is no more, whatever, anything new that might happen to us, Tony, is no more dramatic and potentially dangerous than when the car came in and put the buggies and buggy whips out of business. That was pretty traumatic for those guys.
Right, absolutely.
It just happened over decades and not over 90 days.
Yeah, it may seem to us that, you know, things are, you know, more tragic, but yeah, you look back in history, everyone had to deal with the same things we're dealing with, but you're right, technology has certainly accelerated the pace of change, and so you have to be more nimble today than you probably had to be years ago, but fundamentally, the issues are the same. And, you know, I think there are also two types of changes that I think you need to deal with. There's the actual structural changes, like the buggy whip, right? I mean, we go from non-motorized vehicles to motorized vehicles. So that's a change that's going to be permanent. And then there are economic changes in cycles that you may deal with. I mean, and I think we're probably coming up on one here where there's going to be an economic slowdown probably in the second half of the year. No one really knows how significant it will be. It's not going to affect all businesses uniformly because it's going to affect different income levels in a different fashion. You know, if you look at the numbers today, the high-end retailers continue to do well. Those people that are selling to the upper-income market segment do well. But the ones that are selling into the mid-level, low-end are beginning to struggle a bit, and that may continue. And so one of the things you want to do is anticipate that, and you say, okay, if the economy is going to slow down, and some of my customers may have to pull back their spending. How do I compensate for that revenue? What can I do today to prepare for that cyclical downturn in order to keep my business on an even keel? And then, of course, the more fundamental changes, the structural changes, those need to be anticipated, and you need to have a firm change in your business model to adapt to whatever the new environment will be.
One of the things that I try to encourage people to do, Tony, is I tell them it's okay to fall in love with what you do. Just don't fall in love with how you do it.
Right.
Because people are still going to want to eat at restaurants 20 years from now. They're still going to want to buy groceries. They're still going to buy shoes. They're still going to buy pants and clothes, you know, all those things. They're still going to, you know, travel. They're still going to, you know, get around in some way or another. It's okay to fall in love with what you do. People are still going to want that. They're just going to want it in a different way. And if you fall in love with how you do it, that's when you get in trouble. When we come back, I'm going to ask Tony to explain himself. What does he mean the economy is going to slow down the second half of the year? We're going to put him on the grill when we come back after these messages. 20 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Tony Paradiso is our guest. Welcome back. It's 17 till the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Tony Paradiso, the author of The Management Minefield. Tony, give us your website and tell us where your book's available.
Yeah, it's www.paramarconsulting.com, all one word, paramarconsulting.com.
Right.
And actually, you get the book anywhere. You can go into Barnes & Noble. It's on Amazon.com. You can ask for it.
The Management Minefield, Tony Paradiso. Tony, there are two kinds of influences on the economy these days. There are the fundamental influences, the real, serious, the actual economic and marketplace conditions. And then there are the ones we talk ourselves into. Like, the talking heads on the financial shows can't seem to get off this subpar lending thing. They can't get off of that. They keep trying to analyze it. They keep trying to drum up, you know, some kind of hysteria. I'm really annoyed with them because I don't personally – before I tell you what I think about all that, you said something a minute ago. You said you thought there was going to be a slowdown in the second half. Now, Tony – Are you a fundamentalist or are you a talking head? Which one are you going to be today?
Well, I guess I'm a little bit of both, but I also rail against the talking heads because it's not so much that the discussion of subprime loans is a bad one. It's they're asking all the wrong questions and worried about all the wrong things.
Yeah.
They're worried whether subprime's going to leak into the prime market because all they're really worried about is their stock investments.
Right.
What I'm worried about is the average person and their ability to continue to, you know, meet their own needs. And here's where I see the problem with subprime. It has nothing to do whether prime is going to be a problem. Subprime, the defaults that are going to occur at that level are going to throw more houses onto the market. Higher inventory is going to cause prices to decline further, and the steepness in the drop in housing is going to continue. That's going to affect all of us, because if you look at where the wealth has been created over the last 5 years, it has been in real estate. It's mm-hmm. not been in the stock market. And the average person, although maybe invested in the stock market in a 401k or some sort of retirement plan, derives a much greater percentage of their wealth from housing
and their attitude about stock. their financial condition.
That's right.
Which causes them to spend on this or that. Tony, the only thing about what you're saying that I heard the other day that I thought was interesting is that if 100% of the subprime loans go into default, which they won't, it's less than 1% of all mortgages.
Oh, yes. It's a very small number.
But the two things I guess I keep coming back to, Tony, I mean, I realize there are going to be some people who won't be able to, if interest rates go up, they won't be able to handle, you know, when their loan renews and they have to handle the new payment, they won't be able to deal with that. But the thing is we still have full employment. We still have 2 million jobs going wanting. We still have the underlying asset of the real estate.
Yeah.
So this is not like a stock market crash, which was paper money to start with. I think it's important to point that out, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not like the stock market crash. It's not going to be as severe. It's not going to be as abrupt. It's going to be kind of death by a thousand cuts. But here are the dynamics. You have the defaults in the subprime, which is going to throw more houses into already bloated inventory level of non-sold houses. But here's another thing that people rarely talk about. Credit is tightening up. These subprime loans are going away. Because of subprime, millions of additional people were able to buy homes.
Mm-hmm.
These people are no longer going to be able to afford homes, which means not only do you have a higher level of inventory, you have fewer buyers. Okay? So when you start combining those supply and demand dynamics, it begins
the credit that's going to tighten up is the credit that should have already been tightened, and that's the subprime categories. Many of those people should never have been in a home because they didn't qualify, and it's sort of like what happened in the 90s. You know, a lot of people had jobs in the 90s, and they never should have had jobs because the companies they worked for were bogus.
That's true, but a lot of people made a lot of money, and now you got a lot of high tech workers that were used to six figure salaries or doing other things for half.
I'm going to predict that we're going to get you back on in like October or November. Of course, you'll be on in the meantime, but October, November, we got to come back and revisit this, see who's right. I'm predicting that it's not going to be as bad as you think it will be, and so we'll see who's right in about 6 months.
I'll even go one step further. I don't think this is going to be a terrible decline. I would not be surprised at the end of the year, beginning of 2008, that we have one quarter of negative growth. I'm not predicting a recession, but I do believe that the possibility of a quarter of negative growth is better than 50-50.
So I admire a man who will stick his neck out and say what he thinks. I predicted that, and I may have predicted close to what you did, because I predicted that in the first of the year that the Fed would lower rates by a quarter point in the third quarter. And it was partially in reaction to a settling down of the economy. But folks, these are all things for you to think about. These are the things that Tony and I are talking about are, you know, whatever happens, no one knows what's going to happen. The point that you should take from our discussion is that we are talking about things that are happening. How they turn out, we don't know. We might think we know. We might predict something, but basically, we don't know. But the fundamentals that are happening are real, and these things we should all be taking seriously and taking into account when we do our planning. It's 10 till. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about managing change with our good friend Tony Paradiso.
Well, I was moving down the road in my V8 Ford. I had a shine on my boots. I had my sideburns low with my New York brim and my gold.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and having a great visit with our good friend Tony Paradiso, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Tony is the author of The Management Mindfield. The Management Mindfield, wherever books are sold. Check that out when you get a chance. His website is paramarconsulting.com. Did I say that right, Tony?
That's right. Paramarconsulting.com, all one word.
Tony, let's get back to now that you and I have made our claims and that we're going to come back and check each other out in about 6 months to see who was right. Let's talk a little bit more about managing change, about not only managing change, but leading change. Small business owners must figure out a way, Tony, to get out of the trenches at least once a week and go up to 30,000 feet and see what's coming at them over the horizon, don't they?
Right, right. And one of the clients I'm working with is kind of a classic example. They're importing porcelain from China. decorative items, gift items, things you'd find in a mom-and-pop gift shop. And, you know, it was a great business for many, many years because it was kind of a new business. But unfortunately, when you're in kind of this commodity-like business, you know, something's going to break eventually, right? Mm-hmm. Either the Chinese are going to come over and try to market the stuff directly, or 100 competitors are going to come in and, right. and the market's going to be flooded. And ultimately, that's what happened to them. But they didn't change the way they did business. They would go to 30 trade shows a year, which was an expensive thing to do.
Right.
They were getting diminishing returns.
Did they have a website?
They have a website, yeah, but they weren't really leveraging it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. They didn't change their internal structure to focus on knowing that there's going to be a tremendous amount of competition coming in. What they needed to do was really focus on their core competency, which was finding somewhat unique product in a crowded field of high quality. So their product expertise were their core competency, but they were wasting their time doing all kinds of other things like packing and shipping and, mm-hmm. and things they could have.
They should have been outsourcing that, shouldn't they?
Absolutely, for two reasons. One, there was no value add in them doing it, and in fact, they were able to find a third-party shipper that could more cost-effectively ship the goods. And two, when the business turns down, and in those businesses you're going to hit cyclicality, you've got your expenses as low as possible, and you can weather the storm.
I know a guy who is really good at finding the very best grapes. He's not so good at growing grapes. He's not so good at actually, you know, fermenting the wine and all that. He's found people who are really good at those things. He uses his expertise at buying the best grapes and focusing on the wine. And by focusing on his core competency, he produces one of the top wines on the planet.
Yeah,
and
he
puts all of his capital behind his core competency. And he's been able to carve out a niche in a very highly competitive industry. Your example, Tony, was one of people who fell in love with how they did something instead of just falling in love with what they did.
Yeah, I think they like to see the activity, you know,
yeah.
all the people in the factory just packing things up, and, you know, that meant they were getting lots of revenue, but the trouble was they had lots of expenses.
Right.
And they weren't profitable, and when the business did turn down, they had all this overhead that all of a sudden was sapping them dry.
I know someone who wanted to put out a newsletter, a magazine, a very nice magazine. And it was for a nonprofit, and they were going to have to raise like $250,000 a year to publish this printed magazine. And I said, well, you know, why are you? And they were having trouble raising that kind of money. And I said, why don't you do it electronically, and you'll cut out about 80% of your costs, and that means you'll only have to raise $50,000, not $200,000. You know, and so they were actually, what they were doing is they were going to be doing a lot of work just to keep some printers in business.
Absolutely.
And that wasn't the core reason for wanting to do the magazine. The reason was to get the information out.
Right. And of course, going to a print version was always an option once they built up a big enough
yeah.
base, and there would be less risk, and they'd know they have enough revenue to cover the incremental cost.
Exactly. Exactly. They had the cart before the horse, as you were indicating. Tony, give us that website again one more time, please.
It's www.paramarconsulting, P-A-R-A-M-A-R, consulting, all one word, .com.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for helping us understand how to manage and lead with change. We'll see you next time.
Always a pleasure.
Tony Paradiso, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. And as you know, this program is for you. I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.